And we're on. This is Kevin Evans with the Chapter by Chapter Life Class at Crossroads Assembly of God Church in Greenville. And we've had some microphone issues, and you may have missed the last chapter or so, but we are currently starting chapter 30 in Genesis, which is all about complicated family relationships.
It's also about unfairness.
Well, isn't everything? Yeah. Last night, I got several interesting phone calls. One of them was from an old college friend that I mentioned in here before named Al. He is a Lutheran elder, very, very Christian, very devout and devoted. And he lost his father earlier in the year. And he has been making a point of driving in to visit his mother, who has a number of emotional and possibly mental issues going on. And his brother-in-law, both of his sisters have passed, but he has a brother-in-law who remarried, and he has a nephew and a niece that live nearer the grandma. And the nephew is 14 and has gotten into some juvenile type trouble, and the niece is 20 and has a addiction issue and is hanging out with the wrong people. And Alan is the he's the big, suddenly the patriarch of the family, trying his best to step in and fill all of these little roles. And Alan doesn't have a family of his own, so doesn't have a whole lot of practice. No offense, Alan, if you're listening to this. So he called me the other night after a very hard weekend with all of his complicated, you know, dysfunctional issues. And I listened to it for quite a while. And this is an old habit, because we vent at each other because he doesn't know anybody I know and I don't know anybody he knows. And we can vent and gripe and complain, and it doesn't matter because they're not going to spread it around. You know, it's like that.
You've trashed me too.
It more than once. In fact, when I was in college, I used to joke that when I start feeling sorry for myself, all I have to do is go talk to Alan, listen to his life, and if I compare my life to his life, I look wildly blessed. It's amazing. And I feel better about myself when I walk away. You know, it's like that. You know, you have the same effect with me. That's really awesome.
That's why I come to church here.
Yeah, really? Okay. We walk out feeling great. Okay, so I'm having this conversation with Alan, and he is really hurt. And it had been a rough weekend. And I said, Alan, I'm about to teach this lesson about Jacob and his two wives, Leah and
Rachel,
and how wildly complicated that family was, and how everybody was being hopelessly selfish, perfectly aware that there was a promise from God, but they're not depending upon God at all. They are stepping in to make it work on their own terms and flexing their personal private muscles to achieve the goal that puts them on top of it all. They're competing with each other, and they're looking at each other, and they're not looking to God. And I said, you know, first of all,
I disagree with you.
Of course you do. First of all, I think the lesson number one to draw from that is that we do need to look for God, and in our own issues pale once we get that orientation correct. And I think it, you know, and Alan should stop worrying about the niece and the nephew, not stop worrying about them, but he can't control their decisions. And that niece is 20 years old and capable of ruining her life all on her own without anybody's help. And he needs to reach out and do all that he can, but he is not responsible for decisions that she makes. And he needs to depend upon God and pray for her, and then let God deal with it and not get his heart broken over decisions that she's making, basically to cry out and hurt, you know, at her father. Yeah, of course I was.
I messed up on you.
So, And the second thing is, he can look at Jacob's family and realize that they were so much worse off than he is, and he can feel better about himself because he has it better than Jacob, at least.
Well, the problem with Jacob is that Jacob and Leah both are riding high on all their glory, and Rachel's getting berated and beat up and pushed to the side.
Well, let's put a pin in that as we dig through.
That's just not right. Okay. She's being punished because of Jacob and Leah, and that's just not right.
We did not get chapter 29 recorded, and at the end of chapter 29, we had this, it sets up the rest of this chapter. And so I want to back up to 29:31 and read that again, and just to kind of review what we did last class. And so 31 through the end of chapter 29. When the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Leah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Reuben, for she said, "It is because the Lord has seen my misery. Surely my husband will love me now," which means Reuben's name is misery. She is crying out to Jacob, "Will you please give me a little bit of..." Doesn't really. She is the second wife and the put down wife, and she's dealing with her sister, and there's all this sisterly conflict. Let me finish, and then I'll let you shoot.
She's the first wife.
I'll let you shoot. Yeah, sure. No, second in the eyes of her husband, which is what I meant. Rachel is the what beloved. She's not the favorite. Yeah. So she conceived again, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, "Because the Lord heard that I am not loved, he gave me this one," and she named him Simeon. Again she conceived, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, "Now at last my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons." So he was named Levi. And she conceived again, and when she gave birth to a son, she said, "This time I will praise the Lord." So she named him Judah. And if you look at the names of her sons and what they mean, the first three are all about her mourning and her despair in not having the relationship that she wants with her husband, and how her husband has denied her being the number one thing. And then the last one, she is focused on God. And it looks like she's had a come to Jesus meeting at some point in there.
I don't know where her misery comes in. Her husband keeps sleeping with her, and he's not sleeping with Rachel.
He is sleeping with Rachel. She's not conceiving.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but he's sleeping with this one, too, because look at all the children.
He's a man. I find it interesting that the come to Jesus one and Judah, which is praise, then she ceases bearing.
Well, that doesn't make sense, because when you get into this next chapter, she has more children.
I think that's just it's a literary chapter break. It doesn't really mean that she's become barren.
It means
now we're going to look at what's happening in the other tent. That's all it's saying. Okay, so she stops having children there. Now this happened, you know. So we had these other children happen before she had another child.
But I want somebody to explain to me, how is Leah neglected when she's having all the children?
Oh my gosh, let him go. You've been riding this for weeks.
No. Bill, he's a man. He doesn't love her, but he has an opportunity to sleep with her. And it's about producing children. He wants kids.
And obviously Rachel at this point can't do that.
He's sleeping with both of them.
I know, she's being punished. Her womb
is
closed.
I got a verse that disagrees with the punishment.
I don't think it's not marriage. I don't think it's punishment.
I don't think it's punishment at all. But the job of the husband and the wife in this culture is to have children, whether you love her or not. He doesn't care about her, but he wants kids.
And between the two of these, don't they eventually make up the 12 tribes of?
Well, that's what it is. It's 12 tribes.
This is the beginning of the people. Okay, so chapter 30. Our actual lesson today, 1 through 4, and this continues that setup. So Leah has had these four kids, and now we're going to go to Rachel, who hasn't had any children during these 4 years or so, 4 or 5 years or so, at a 9 month conception, then the 3 month, because the basic average between children is 2 years. Every 2 years? Yeah. When you're really, really busy, every 2 years.
Every year.
Huh?
Have that talk.
is possible.
Yeah, because I have a brother and a sister that are the same age for 3 weeks, and then that sister is the same age as the other sister for 3 days. Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
which means they're a year apart.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which means that they didn't.
My mom popped the kid out a year.
But on the average, and Mr. Family History, I've done a lot of averaging. 2 years in big families, 2 years in between each child is the average. Yeah.
No, but is it when that happens, is it that because they didn't wait the 6 weeks or 8 weeks?
No. Do your math, it does. So it just means you didn't wait very long after.
Canada would get cold.
Or my favorite answer, no TV. Okay.
So
there were other reasons.
When Rachel saw that she was not bearing Jacob any children, she became jealous of her sister, which I think she was already jealous of her sister. So she said to Jacob, "Give me children or I'll die." Oh, my word, what a little drama queen.
Well, he got kind of ugly with her, didn't he?
Jacob became angry with her and said, "Am I in the place of God who has kept you from having children? It's not like I ain't trying, woman, you know." Then she said, "Here is Bilhah, my maidservant. Sleep with her so that she can bear children for me, and that through her I can build a family." She is so jealous of her sister, she is giving her husband another chick to back up her team.
So she's going to had the children, and then Rachel's going to take them away from her and raise them as hers.
Yes.
Right. Essentially, it's like
it's a surrogate mother.
Surrogate, yeah.
So she gave her servant Bilhah as a wife. Jacob slept with her, and she became pregnant and bore him a son. Then Rachel said, "God has vindicated me. He has listened to my plea and given me a son." Because of this, she named him Dan. And Dan means judgment. So God has finally passed judgment on Rachel and is starting to lift her up to that level of esteem that she is so worthy of. It is about Rachel's self-esteem.
But here's the point that I'm a little confused about.
Okay.
Why is she being punished? Because
Rachel's not being punished.
Well, what I mean is, she's done. It's like she's done something wrong, and so that's why she's not having children.
I'm gonna read this because I said this last week. God is.
No, I'm not saying. I'm not saying God's doing that. I'm saying that why is she so angry that she can't even conceive children?
That she wants kids.
That happens with women all day long.
That happens all the day.
Well, yeah, I know. I've been through all of that.
I'm just not getting this. I'm trying to understand where you're going about punishment and judgment. And
it says that, where is that? Yeah, it says, and she says here, and Rachel said, "God had judged me." So that's what I'm a little confused at. What's he judging her for?
Okay. You're going through the English. We're talking about Hebrew language here. Judgment does not have to be bad. I could judge you for being a nice guy. What she's saying here is God has he has judged me and vindicated me.
I know, that's what I'm trying.
That's a positive, not a negative.
I know, I'm just trying to figure out why she was being judged to begin with.
Everyone's judged from the beginning with by God. He judges all of us. I think you're stuck in this judgment negative, punishment negative thing.
Yeah.
And understand, was he punishing Sarah when she was barren?
No, but we never had where Sarah said that God had judged me.
Well, okay.
Maybe what she's really saying is, hey, I'm barren, so I went to God and prayed about it to make sure it wasn't something in my life that was causing it. God judged me and found no fault in me on this.
We're going to, I know.
I like it.
Jennifer's got mad at me, but that's King James. The actual Hebrew translation for that word judgment, what they do in English, is vindication. It's not the, oh, you did something bad and I'm judging you. Mm. The actual translation from Hebrew to English says, God has vindicated me. Mm. and he has shown favor on me.
But wouldn't the real vindication be if she herself bare the child?
Okay, but understand, she's adopting this child.
Oh, I know.
And God is vindicated. This is what I prayed for, and God gave this. She prayed, God, give a child through Bill to me. He said, and he did it. She goes, I've been vindicated. She's actually happy right here. Did I explain that well enough?
You did. You did a fine job. Thank you so very much. Let's hope it takes.
Because there's another verse that comes on that proves that point that that is said later.
Well, and then I noticed when you get down further trapped, then her wound opened up again.
Well, yeah. We got another reason, but go ahead.
Before we go any further, I want to go back and look at verse 3 a little bit. And in the NIV, it says, then she said, here is Bilhah, my maidservant. Sleep with her that she can bear children for me, and that through her I can build a family. In Hebrew, that term is an idiom, on her knees. Mm-hmm. And I think in the King James, it translates the idiom word for word. And we had hit this before when we looked at Abraham and Sarah and Hagar, and I thought we needed to review that. There are two interpretations of the idiom. One of them is that Rachel will adopt Bilhah's child, and that after the child is born, instead of taking the child to the mother where it will nurse, it is handed to Rachel, and the child is placed on her knees as part of an adoption ceremony, so that the child knows this is your mother now. And so, and Rachel will therefore become responsible for her. The other translation, which is interesting, is that the child was literally conceived and born on Rachel's knees, and there were actually some cultures that practiced that kind of thing. And the lady that wrote Handmaid's Tale made a whole lot of use of it in her writings. So that is a kind of a creepy tradition. That is a possibility here, but the end result is that Rachel adopts this child. It is not technically Bilhah's child anymore, by the legal standards of the day.
But wouldn't Bilhah have nursed it till it was ready? Yeah,
probably.
To probably.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting here is the word knee is in the Hebrew is berek, and it's related to the same word of bless.
Yep.
Barak.
It's a little. It's
plain words.
Yeah. It's a little vague, and there's connotative meanings in there, and we don't exactly know what they're talking about. Okay, so.
I do know what she's got. What Rachel's going through was, I was married to a woman that couldn't have children, and she was obsessed with having a child. I mean, we spent a lot of money trying to have a child.
So, a therapist, when you talk about a therapist.
No, I don't need a therapist. I know kind of what she's.
Okay. I'm sorry, Bill. Verse 7. Since Dan, is born, and we have this child, and Bilhah is now evidently wife number 3, Rachel's servant Bilhah conceived again. So Jacob, you know, it's not just Leah. He's got other chicks in line. Yeah,
he's jumped at the chance.
Got a whole row of tents right there. Yeah.
Hamilton says Jacob raises no question about Rachel's suggestion. He complies.
Yes, yeah. There was no argument from Jacob. Jacob conceived.
That's kind of like Abraham. He didn't give any question either.
Nope. Yes, dear. Then Rachel said, I have had a great struggle with my sister, and I have won. So she named the second child Naphtali. I think it's interesting that the women are doing these names and not the men. Wouldn't it usually be dad that's naming this child? Naphtali means wrestle, evidently, in old Hebrew, Arabic, something, something. So Rachel is literally gloating over her sister through the names of the children being born to her maidservant.
But why is she victorious? Because, I mean, how many children did Leah already have?
Four at this point.
Four, so she's only got two.
Gaining.
She's gaining, and she's going, I not only have I finally had, I'm still the favorite.
Yep. When Leah saw that she had stopped having children And that Rachel is, you know, farming it out now and has built up her team, and she realizes that she's outnumbered in the childbearing department. She feels like she needs to build Team Leah, you know, a little bit bigger. And they reorganized the tents, and they made some of them red and some of them green so that we know what side we're on. Okay, that wasn't in there, but.
Maury.
I could if I were writing this screenplay, that's totally how I'd do it.
You are the father.
Yeah. Then Leah saw that she had stopped having children. She took her maidservant, Zilpah, and gave her to Jacob as a wife. And Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a son, and Leah said, "What good fortune." So she named him Gad, which means good fortune, or weirdly troop. It can also mean army.
You know, it's amazing back then that wasn't considered cheating on your wife to be with the handmaiden.
Evidently, well, if the wife hands the handmaiden to you at the door, then I guess, you know, it's not like she didn't know.
I know, but it's just amazing that wasn't considered cheating on your wife.
Well, it was actually more common than what you think.
Yeah.
Hamilton says that he translates, luck has come.
Luck has come. Is that what Gad is? Okay. Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a second son, because Jacob got right back in there. And then Leah said, "How happy I am!" And the woman will call me happy. So she named him Asher, and Asher means obviously happy.
Poor Jacob's being forced to do all this. Yes.
I know. So at this point, the score is Team Leah 6 and Team Rachel 2. During wheat harvest, Reuben went out into the fields and found some mandrake plants, which he brought to his mother Leah. Rachel said to Leah, "Give me some of your son's mandrakes." But she said to her, "Wasn't it enough that you took away my husband? Will you take away my son's mandrakes too?"
What's a mandrake?
We'll get in there.
And then she had a prostitute her husband out.
"Very well," Rachel said. "He can sleep with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes. So give me some of these." And we're actually negotiating tent privileges among the women at this point. So when Jacob came in from the fields that evening, Leah went to meet him. "You must sleep with me," she said. Now remember, Leah hasn't had any children yet. Since the first four. "I have hired you with my son's mandrakes." So she slept with her that night. And I'm going to stop right there.
I didn't think Jacob felt being prostituted out for mandrakes.
I don't think he cared at all. Just, at this point, it's like, whatever you guys figured out, I'm glad you're getting along. Great. Well, whatever you say.
And please tell me, what is a mandrake?
Okay. Well, I put an hour into this.
Yeah.
Okay. A mandrake is the other name for it is called a love apple in Hebrew, and it is a plant that's basically toxic. It will kill you in dozens of ways. It's poisonous, but it's used in certain quantities and in small quantities in various ancient medications. And it is not an aphrodisiac, as they like to think of it.
It was a myth.
It's a parasympathetic depressant, a hallucinogen, and a hypnotic, or whatever that is. This is...
Bill, you should have taken mandrakes on you.
This is like some serious wild mushroom kind of business. And the first time you take it, you get a buildup of a certain chemical. I didn't understand all of the chemical reactions here, but you'll survive the first time and you'll be seriously high.
That's what it looks like.
And you have a
second tomato.
Looks like a tomato.
I won't tell you what I think that looks like.
Yeah, well.
So you'll have this kind of a high euphoric experience,
Did she roofie him?
Well, I think it would be a good drug for the orgy. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody's going to be high and out of it, and all her inhibitions are down. So that's what it was used for in ancient cultures.
So then, why did Rachel want the mandrake?
Hold on. Lowers brain patterns into a dreamy, visionary mode, And it's used a lot in magic, and supposedly it takes you to the astral plane. Highly toxic. And with repeated uses, it gets more toxic. So wow. if you take mandrake once to try to have children, you should probably not take it again to take the next child. The more times you take mandrake, the more highly likely it is it's going to kill you.
I know, but why did, that's what I mean, why did Rachel want the mandrakes if she was given Jacob to Leah?
Because it was understood to be an aphrodisiac.
And helps with fertility.
Yes.
I know, but
that's how they understood it. Does that actually happen? No, it just makes you high as a kite.
She wasn't sleeping with Jacob when she got the mandrake. She was letting Leah sleep with him, so that's what I was kind of confused of why she wanted the mandrake.
Okay.
Either that or she was addicted.
No. She's been sleeping. She's still sleeping with Jacob.
I know, but I'm saying this particular night.
She wants that night. You can have him tonight. Tomorrow night, I'm going to give him the mandrake.
Oh, okay. But here's the thing I don't understand. I hear people talking about mushrooms that make you high. I thought mushrooms are something you put on pizza and stuff. How do they?
There's different types of
different
mushrooms.
Types of mushrooms.
There's certain types of mushrooms that
what,
like an
what
LSD.
Rock has he been living under all?
I know that there's mushrooms that can kill you.
But oh, there's also some that are like
hallucinatory. And then there's just regular mushrooms you can.
Because I heard an actress talking about she never had mushrooms before and she ate them and all of a sudden.
I'll
she
bring some
out.
Next week for Sunday school.
Yeah, there you go.
So I was just curious. Kind of mushrooms they were.
Different types.
No more mandrakes.
Internet, do you hear that? Bill would like to buy some magic mushrooms. Please contact him.
I don't want any magic.
Actually, they're using it for therapy for people with PTSD, like in the military.
Of course they are. Just like they used LSD in the 60s in therapy. It was such a success. Okay.
It was acid back then, wasn't it?
It's still called acid because it's glypho something acid. Yes.
Well, we go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, so acid and LSD were the same.
Okay.
Yes, okay. They're the same.
I thought they were two different
things. Nope, same thing. Okay, so God listened to Leah, and she became pregnant and bore Jacob a fifth son. Then Leah said, God has rewarded me for giving my maidservant to my husband. So God is rewarding her for increasing her team and getting more children. And Issachar means...
Do you really think God blessed her for giving her maidservant?
I don't have Issachar's translation. I thought I had that. Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. Then Leah said, God has presented me with a precious gift, and this time my husband will treat me with honor because I have borne him six sons. So she named him Zebulun.
I don't think Jacob really cared.
Issachar's reward, and Zebulun means dwelling.
I think he was just enjoying the moment.
So I guess Jacob's going to live in my tent now. That means dwelling,
maybe.
Right? Is that what she was going for? Not sure exactly what she was after there.
But do you really think God was blessing her because she let him sleep with her?
Okay, look, God promised Abraham that he was going to give him descendants like the sand of the beach, and you got to start somewhere. So Abraham's only had like two kids, and so basically Jacob has to get busy here in order to found 12 tribes of Israel. And so having two or three women help him out in that regard kind of speeds things up. I think they're being incredibly selfish and incredibly competitive, and they're not the least bit depending upon God to provide this providence. However, I think God is using their human petty selfishness to develop his own ends, because in the end, God's will is going to prevail. The problem is that if we can either be on that train or not on that train and running like the Dickens to try to catch up. And I would rather not be running along the side of the train. I'd rather be on it. Does that make sense?
This is God's grace.
Yes. Yes.
Was Levi, the one named Levi, did he become the Levites?
Yes. So.
And we haven't got to the Kohathite one yet, right?
No. So. What have I left out?
You're in Zebulun. You left off at Zebulun.
Okay.
Verse 20.
Right. So, which means that my husband's going to sleep in my tent tonight. That's how I just translate the name Zebulun. 21, sometime later she gave birth to a daughter and named her Dinah, which means justice. And most commentaries go, we're not sure that this really has any connotation to it whatsoever. But you know what? I think it does. Every name of every child here is a tweak to the other wives.
Was Diana the one that got raped?
Yes. And so her name is Justice, and that was the end of Leah's children at that point. Then God remembered Rachel. Oh, wait, Rachel gets pregnant again. And she opened her womb, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. And she says, God has taken away my disgrace. She named him Joseph and said, may the Lord add to me another son. So thank you, God. Another, please.
And the interesting thing about this is the same word for remembered is the same word that he used for God remembered Noah, which actually means favor.
Okay, so he favored her.
Well, it's not in terms of favor over everybody. I'm showing you my gracious
right.
favor.
So it's not like he forgot she was there. He just said, your
this
turn now. Here's your blessing. Yeah.
Because in the end, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, Rachel ends up giving birth to the child of the inheritance, Joseph. She gives birth. Rachel gives
Joseph isn't the child of the inheritance.
No.
Joseph is critical. He's important
he's
to his generation.
He's the child.
Yes.
And that wins for Rachel. There's a win for Rachel.
But the child of the Messiah came through Judah, who's way back there.
And Joseph is a type of Christ.
Yes.
Well, that's what I'm just saying. Just the
favor
of God says, hey, this kid that I'm going to give you, he's going to be the deliverer of the family.
Okay.
But why do you think he was the favorite?
Because it's Rachel's.
I mean, among all these children.
His favorite wife.
Got a favorite.
Yeah, sure. I think honest parents will admit it.
You hate everybody.
Wow.
You at least hate one, I guess.
Okay, so she named him. I just think it was interesting that Joseph is the big key role in this generation.
That's what I meant by
and the last of every last bit of Genesis, the next 15 chapters is chronicling Joseph's
that's
story.
That's what I was meaning by
yes.
The child of significance for this
right.
generation.
But and he founds two tribes.
And he's the founder.
Which ended up being tiny and in the north and disappeared. They you know,
Ephraim
his
was a powerful tribe throughout the years. Many of the greatest warriors came through.
Okay. But Judah is the tribe of kings, and that's the
and
line
the
of Christ. Yeah. So if I were writing the screenplay for this and not you know following it. Wouldn't you want Joseph to be the big and then his child would be the next big guy and his child
so interesting.
Oh I know it jumps around
Judah's a little bit of a
he's not
and
a hero.
Joseph is really of the 12 the most towards Christ like or towards that but it's through Judah. The guy who ends up sleeping with his daughter-in-law and such. You would think it would be Joseph, but it's not. But he does get two tribes for one.
Yes.
And Benjamin, there's not a lot said about Benjamin.
Benjamin comes a very small tribe.
Yeah.
No, they're like one of the smallest tribes.
Yeah.
But isn't Tamar the daughter, that daughter-in-law?
Tamar.
But it was his fault that she had to sleep with him.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that.
Because he deceived them.
Okay, we've got 15 minutes for some really weird stuff.
Let's go with the weird.
I really want to get into the weird stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is that was all the kids. So now Jacob's got a house full of women and a house full of kids.
Poor guy.
And oh, I know.
Hey, it's on his own duty.
And all of this is still up in Haram Baram or whatever, and he is living among pagan peoples. And, Laban is evidently a diviner from all these references that we're getting from him. We're inferring a lot of that. So now he's ready to kind of move on. He's done his 14 years. He's been abused, and now he wants to get out of here. Yeah. So here is how that story breaks down. After Rachel gave birth to Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me on my way so that I can go back to my own homeland. Give me my wives and children from whom I have served you, and I will be on my way. And you know how much work I've done for you." But Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your eyes, please stay. I have learned by divination," that's my NIV translation, "that the Lord has blessed me because of you." And he added, "Name your wages and I will pay them," which is exactly the same thing he told him before when he was trying to get married.
He doesn't want to get rid of the golden goose.
No, of course not. And he knows where the wealth is coming from. Jacob says to him, "You know how I have worked for you and how your livestock has fared under my care. The little you have had before I came was increased greatly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have been. But now, when may I do something for my own household?" "What shall I give you?" Laban asked, repeating. "Don't give me anything," Jacob replied, "but if you will do this one thing for me, I will go on tending your flocks and watching over them. Let me go through all your flocks today and remove from them every speckled or spotted sheep, every dark-colored lamb, and every spotted or speckled goat. They will be my wages, and my honesty will testify for you in the future. Whenever you check on the wages you have paid me, any goat in my possession that is not speckled or spotted, or any lamb that is not dark colored, will be considered stolen." Okay, let's stop there for a second. I spent another 45 minutes trying to dig into the genetic feature representation in sheep, and it was really hard for me to find a good article to explain that.
Well, it sticks and stuff in the water.
Sheep, we're getting there. Sheep have 16 color alleles, and one of them is dominant, which is white. And an allele is a group of genes that indicate one phenotype feature, and human eye color is the usual example. 55% of the human population have brown eyes. Brown eyes are wildly dominant. 6% of the world's population have blue eyes. And when you have a couple that are brown-eyed and blue-eyed, their kids are going to have brown eyes because of dominance, unless there's recessive genes, and we all understand binomial recessive genes.
How do you get green eyes?
You know, there are multiple alleles, and there are green. Actually, that gets even more complicated, and I'm not going to bother. But there are different genes that affect things, and there's actually a hazel eye, which is not green. I always thought it was green, and it actually changes color depending on
light
and chemical things going on in your body. Yeah. So hazels are weird. Anyway, that's all beside the point. When you're talking about sheep, white is wildly dominant. I could not find what the percentage of spotted sheep are, but it's small, and at least around 6% is my best guess.
The best, which is not normal, but the best would be
20%. 20?
But it's most likely a lot less than that.
Yeah.
The best case scenario is 20%.
Laban thought he was really selling himself short, and this is a great deal, not giving you very much.
Sure, and cheat a little bit.
Yes. Okay, and so I'm looking at this hocus-pocus spell-looking thing that Jacob does. It freaks me out. And I start looking that up, and it seems there's something called... I wrote it down. There is a post-genetic alteration of DNA that scientists regularly use to cancel out a gene. And basically what they do is they take a little protein particle, a little molecule, and it will attach to the side of a specific gene, It's not CRISPR. It's not cutting the gene and adding another gene in. It's blocking that gene. And when that gene pairs with another gene, when you're developing an egg, that will bend the DNA in such a way that that gene will be blocked off and the other gene will become apparent, even if it's recessive. And there are a number of things that will cause those weird little effects, and it has to do with the chemicals that the mother is eating in some cases. Darwin's finches is a very good example. Darwin was trying to prove evolution by all these different finches and all these different islands having either pointed beaks or curved beaks or big birds or little birds, and the feathers are different depending on what they were eating. And so, as it turns out, they all have exactly the same DNA, but when the bird is eating seeds, there's a chemical in the seed that activates, it blocks certain genes in the DNA so that the offspring have curved beaks so that they can eat seeds better, and so they produce a phenotype that is better suited to that area. Whereas the same gene in the same bird on a different island that's eating bugs needs long beaks in order to eat the bugs, and the chemicals in the bugs are having a different effect on different genes and causing that to happen. I mean, so there's a whole nother non-genetic thing going on in genes, which I was wildly unaware of until last night. Yes, it's environmental.
It's environmental evolution. Mm-hmm. That's what they call it.
Yeah. So your environment can affect how your children are born, and it's not a change in genes. It's about whatever environment the parent was in. So Jacob takes some sticks that are mottled in color. He shaves them so that they're black and white, and he sticks them in the bottom of a water trough or a feed trough, and all the sheep come in to eat. And they tend to mate right there because that's where all the sheep are. And so he would route the stronger sheep in front of his sticks, and they would produce offspring that were mottled in color, which is the recessive gene. Somehow, mottled sticks is shutting down the dominant color trait. In both sheep and goats. Yes, God is in good. I'm just trying to figure out the mechanism. I recognize this as God, but you know, why would did God tell Jacob that he needs to use sticks?
Hamilton says he feels like maybe God did kind of.
Yeah, in the next chapter, it kind of infers it. He doesn't say it, but it infers it. But I think there's a scene here where Jacob had a dream about sticks and mottled goats and thought, yeah, I'll do that. And sure enough, it worked. Yeah. So I think God led him to this. And oh, by the way, because I spent way too much time on sheep, I gave you a little picture of a sheep. And they think that is the specific breed that Jacob was talking about. It's got four horns. There's two horns going up and two horns going down. And it's been missing from the Middle East for a long time. They died out. Now they're being reintroduced like they're direwolves or something, you know.
Means the rapture's going to happen.
Is that what it is? Okay.
I've been seeing a lot of that the last couple of weeks.
Okay. So, so Jacob does this thing. And it seemed creepy when I first saw it. I thought, what kind of, you know, pagan hocus pocus is this? I have to assume that this was leading by God, because it seems to be well within God's will.
Yeah. And you said he dreamed about it, so that was God.
Later he references a dream, and so, but he doesn't really tell us everything that happened in it. 34.
It was the mushrooms that made him dream.
Sure. Agreed, said Laban. Let it be as you have said. The same day he removed all the male goats that were speckled or spotted, and all the spotted females, all that had white on them, and all the dark-colored lambs, and he placed them in the care of his sons. Then he put a three-day journey between himself and Jacob, while Jacob continued to tend the rest of Laban's flocks. Jacob, however, took fresh-cut branches from poplar almond plane trees and made white stripes in them by peeling the bark and exposing the white inner wood of the branches. Then he placed the peeled branches and all the water troughs so that they would be directly in front of the flocks when they came to drink. And when the flocks were in heat and came to drink, they mated in front of the branches and they bore young that were streaked or speckled or spotted. Okay, we're up to there. Jacob set apart the young of the flock by themselves and made the rest face the streaked and dark-colored animals that belonged to Laban. Oh, I was trying to make it before he left. Thus he separated flocks by himself and put them by Laban's animals. Whenever the stronger females were in heat, Jacob would place the branches in the troughs in front of the animals so that they would mate near the branches. But if the animals were weak, he would not place them there. So the weak animals went to Laban and the strong ones to Jacob. In this way, the man grew exceedingly prosperous and came to own large flocks and maidservants and manservants and camels and donkeys, which is what he bought with all the extra sheep.
Spots on his or something, or didn't Laban?
That would cost him a sheep. Laban was white.
I mean, I know, but didn't his sons paint the sheep or something?
I have not studied that yet. That is the end of chapter 30, and it is still an ongoing story because this is just building up between a big conflict between Laban and Jacob as they continue to deceive each other.
Yeah, Laban is.
So is Jacob. Come on, let's give him some credit.
Well, yeah.
These two just set up train wreck after train.
They really are. They're two peas in a pod, if you ask me. Okay.
No honor among thieves.
That's right.
And God blessed Jacob.
And that is really strange. Y'all are saying that Jacob's a thief. And the deceiver, and God's blessing him. I mean, that's
God's grace.
That's God's mercy.
Yeah.
And God, it was God's intention. You probably do see a little bit of changing in Jacob coming along here. He's not the Jacob he was 14 years before. Or
yeah.
The other side.
And God knows that.
And God knows that. And God, let's realize something here. God blesses us despite all our weaknesses and negativities that we do. We're honorary too. If God's blessings are bent on perfection, we're all in trouble.
Don't you think his main change came when he wrestled with God and he touched his hip?
But I think there's changing going on all during this. This 14 years is development of Jacob and his family. And you know, because you even think, how could God bless us despite our weaknesses? And it is part of God's plan that all these kids are born to four women. And, you know, we can't. I just leave it to God, trust God for it.
Yep.
There's a lot of people I've seen go, how did God bless that person?
And with that, we will look at chapter 31 next week. And Lester and Kenny, I hope you're listening. Bye.